What's up, Buffalo Fanatics? Josh Allen here. Just wanted to say, go Bills.
Yo, 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 what's good, Bills Mafia, Buffalo Fanatics? What's happening? Welcome to another edition, another episode of Rated Rev. Brought to you by the Buffalo Fanatics Network. This is Thursday Night Live, baby. This is how we doing it. And the BF crew is back at our regular schedules. And yo, we are coming with that heat, baby. From week to week, we bring you that heat to clear the tables because it's time to eat. Stand up. Let me know where y'all watching from in the chat. You know how we do it. This is a roll call. Roll call. Let me know where you at. I see Scott Blakely in the house. Kobe Wankanobi, what's going on? You guys, Bills fan, 1970s been in here. You already know how we do it. I'm excited as all get out. The Bills season is almost around the corner. We are in the middle of training camp. It's going down. I hope you guys had a fantastic Thursday. Hope you guys have enjoyed your week. But yo, I am all fire right now, guys. I'm fired up. Scott Blakely, what's happening? What's happening, man? From Chicago, Chi-Town in the building. Chi-Town in the building. Yo, I'm gonna need y'all to let me know what's up. And I hope you guys are ready. We have got a lot to talk about tonight. We got a lot to get into. And I'm excited about it. But before we get into it, yo, what's good? Richard Forbes all the way from Daytona Beach, Florida. What's happening, baby? What's happening? All right, I got Maurice Anderson all the way from Vegas. Yo, the chat is popping off tonight, man. This is how we do it. Jeff King, what's happening, my man? All the way from PA. Good to see you, Jeff. As always, my brother. Look, you guys do me this favor. You know how we do it. Before we go any further, if you are not connected to the BF Network, go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now to the channel. Turn the bell notifications on so you can stay up to date with everything related to the Buffalo Bills and the BF Network. Let's go. And while you're at it, smash that like building. Smash that like. Yo, what's up, Byron? Hey, I appreciate you, man. Appreciate you. Glad you like that music. Yo, that music is banging, ain't it? Yo, I can listen to that music all night. What's up, Ismar Alvarado? Coming all the way from Cali. What's good? What's good? What's good? Hey, yo, we're live, baby. We are live Thursday night. All the way from CA, repping from CA, Anthony Altimus. In the house. Yo, I'm excited about it, man. We got some stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills training camp watch. I hope you guys have been watching the training camp, as I know so many of us have been, but we're going to dive into it tonight. We've got some topics to discuss. Yo, have you guys been watching the Bills rookies? Man, hey, Bills rookies ain't playing tonight. The Bills rookies ain't playing this, and they coming with it. So all the vets who are out there trying to secure their job, you better make sure you looking over your shoulder like this, because these rookies are coming for it. The rookies are coming for you. Hey, we're also going to talk about the offense. Now, I know there's been some early growing pains in the offense as camp started, but yo, Josh Allen is cooking, baby. He is cooking. And we're going to talk about that because I think Josh has got his groove back, man. I think Josh in the offense got that groove back. We're going to talk about that, too, tonight. We got a whole lot we're going to talk about. O-line continuity. What's going on with the O-line, man? Can we finally get some offensive linemen healthy at the start of camp so that way we can get that continuity started? We're going to talk about that as well. So you guys don't go anywhere. Keep it locked right here on the best network, bringing you the best in Bills content. You know who it is, baby. You see the banner behind me. It's the BF Network. Let's go. What's up, Ronald Needix? I see you, man, in the house. Yo, what's happening? Yo, I hope you guys are fired up. I hope you guys are ready, because I am ready. I see my man Eric coming in all the way in from Greensboro, North Carolina. What's happening? Hey, Richard coming in here. Yo, did y'all get in on the Mega Millions? Yo, if I got in on the Mega Millions, I would not be at work. There would be no working for your boy Rev right now. It would not be happening. I missed out on it, you know, not gonna lie. But you never know. Unless y'all want to buy me some tickets, let's go in on it. What's up, Ronald? What's up? You guys smash that like button. You already know how we do it. And let's get the show popping. Let's go ahead and get the show popping. I hope you guys are ready for the show, man. Yo, I'm excited. You know, I don't know how I can continue to overstate it. But I am ready for the show. And I hope you guys are as ready for it as I am. So let's keep it pumping. Let's keep it pumping. I told you off the top, yo, we're going to talk about the Bills rookies, man. The Buffalo Bills rookies are showing out. These dudes are showing out in camp. Now, it's one thing, you know what I'm saying, for us to be excited about draft picks, you know what I'm saying, and hyped up and all that kind of stuff, because we fans, right? We're fans. That's what we're going to do. But it's a whole nother ball game. Yo, when these dudes are actually showing up and they ain't scared of nobody. Ain't scared of nobody. I don't know if you guys heard about it or not. I think you did. Did you guys catch that tweet from Sal Capaccio when he was talking about Stephon Diggs and our first round draft pick, Kyir Elam, going at it? Going at it. That's exactly what you want to see. This is exactly what you want to see out of your rookies, man. You want to see your rookies on fire. You want to see your rookies not scared of nothing. You want to see them hitting the ground running. And there is no better opportunity, no better chance for Kyir Elam to get on the right path, to get on the right track, to get things started right, than to have to go up against one of the best wide receivers in the game. And you know who that is. That's our Stephon Diggs. And yo, Sal Capaccio, he talked about something. And this is what he said. I want you guys to see this. Yo, so Sal, let me see if I can make it big. I don't know if I can make it big or not. So Sal, he spoke on this, and this is what he said. Yo, he was like, yo, first rep of one-on-ones looked like Elam Hale Diggs. Okay, we got that. Stephon didn't like it at all. They were holding each other close and definitely having an animated conversation. One of the other DBs made sure it didn't go any further. All right. So you see right there off the top, you see my man Kyir Elam ain't playing. Yeah, he was a little grabsy, a little handsy, but he's getting all up in Diggs, right? Because we know who Kyir Elam is, right? He's a physical cornerback. He plays man, press man coverage. That's his game, okay? And if you're not mistaken, our man back in the day, Stephon Gilmore, was also kind of grabsy as well. Kind of handsy, kind of grabsy. You know, he got a lot of flags in Buffalo when he was starting, you know, his rookie year. But we know how good of a cornerback he turned out to be, right? Not trying to make a comparison. I don't know what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm just letting you know. You never know. But then Sal Capaccio comes back, and he's like, yo, this is the second day in a row where Diggs and Elam barked at each other a bit. Yesterday, Stephon stared him down and had a few words on his way back to the huddle after a contested play. Yo, you guys, look. Isn't this what you want? I mean, what more can you ask for out of your first round draft pick, man? Kyir Elam is that dude, man. And I love how he's bringing the moxie. I love how he's bringing the swag. I love how he's bringing the physicality right off the bat. I'm not concerned about the handsy stuff. I'm not concerned about that. He's letting Diggs know, yo, I'm going to get up all up in your grill. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a matter of technique. It's coaching, right? It's coaching. So, and didn't they, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they, and yo, Evan, let me know if I'm correct. Didn't they give him some gloves? Right, some gloves or something like that to try to, some boxing gloves or something like that. I thought I heard something about that to try to work on his technique. That's what I heard. Is that right, Evan? Let me bring you to the stream, Evan. You let me know if I'm correct.
Yeah, I kind of heard a little bit about that. I'm not too how sure like that is, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him some boxing gloves, you know, just to get his technique down. You know, like you mentioned, he's a physical press man corner.
Right.
And, you know, that's how those early corners are. Like when you're going up against a guy like Stephon Diggs who can get free right off his release, you get tempted. And as a rookie corner going up against a guy like Stephon Diggs with Trey White, you know, watching from behind you, you're going to want to impress. and you don't want to get dusted. And like you mentioned, Stephon Gilmore was very handsy early on in his career. I don't want to make the comparison, but like, I think we should make the comparison that this guy could be that good of a corner.
He could be. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
And you know, like, you know, Kyrie Elam's coming out of Florida, you know, coming into an environment where he might have to be that cornerback one. He's going to have to do everything. And he has to do what it's willing to take to make those, you know, sacrificing plays. And if Elam has to, you know, grab a guy here and there to save a touchdown, I'm fine with it. And, you know, he's got to get those reps early and often. And, you know, Elam's going up against Stephon Diggs, like you mentioned, one of the best in the game.
Yeah.
He's going to get his reps. And if he gets toasted, he gets toasted. But, you know, he's going to get down early and often.
Yeah, yeah, so be it. And I like what 716 Troop said. He says, yo, I love the energy the rookie's bringing. He's supposed to do that. Iron sharpens iron. And that's what this is about. Yo, we want the competition. But that competition level to be on fire, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm seeing right now out of our young rookie cornerback in Kyrie Elam. He's getting after it. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the grabsy, handsy stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? He'll learn, right? They'll coach him up. We've got great coaches who will coach him up and coach his technique. But man, I love the fact that he's getting after it early and often, and he's letting his presence be felt and known right off the bat. Now, Kitty possibly see some early flags. It's quite possible. It really just depends on how quickly he develops throughout training camp. You know what I'm saying? But this is what you want, though, out of your cornerback. You want a guy in Trey White on the other side of the field, right, who we know is an elite zone cornerback, right? He's not an elite man coverage cornerback, but he's an elite zone corner. But then opposite of him, when you bring in a guy like Kyrie Elam, who's going to get all up in your chest, all up in your grill, son, you know what I'm saying? You want that physicality right there to let these receivers know you ain't getting no free release off the line of scrimmage. I'm coming after you, and you're going to feel me early and often. And that's what I like about Kyrie Elam. He's a big corner. He's not backing down from anybody, especially one of the top wide receivers in the game is Stephon Diggs, man. I love what he's bringing to the table. This is exactly, as Richard Forbes says, this is exactly what you want to see out of your rookie cornerback. I love it. I love it, man. And I think that, and just like you said, Evan, it's we might as well consider comparing or at least showing the path that Kyrie Elam has as it relates to Stephon Gilmore. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the type of cornerback that Gilmore was as a rookie and early in his. We saw it, and we got frustrated. I got frustrated as all get out. You know what I'm saying? Watching Stephon Gilmore constantly get thrown these flags. You know what I'm saying? But he grew out of it. He grew out of it. But that was his game. That was his game. And now what is it? He was an all-pro cornerback.
Defensive player of the year.
Defensive player of the year.
2019.
Right. Exactly. And so could we see Kyrie Elam on a similar trajectory? I can see it. It's early, right? You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to go ahead and crown him. You know what I'm saying? As the defensive player of the year, all-pro cornerback. But I can definitely see the potential there. Potential to Scott Blakely comes in and says, yo, it's confirmed. He did have boxing gloves on, stops the grabbing and works on technique. Okay, appreciate that, Scott, for confirming that. Yo, that's what I thought I heard. So, yeah, it works on technique early on. So we're teaching him not to be grabsy, which is good, but he's still able to be physical, which is what it was, which is exactly what we want out of him. That's why they drafted him, man. That's his game. Physicality off the bat. And when you look at the raw receivers, Evan, that we're going to be going up against early in the year, we want that. You got a guy like Cooper Kupp. We don't want him having free release, even though he's probably not going to be lined up against Kyrie Elam. I'm sure that's going to be, you know, Teron Johnson. But you got Allen Robinson. Who's going to guard Allen? Is that going to go to Dane Jackson, or do you want your bigger, stronger cornerback in Kyrie Elam, even though he's a rookie, going after him? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, either or. They got Van Jefferson and Allen Robinson. And heck, we don't know. I mean, they could even bring back OBJ. You don't know. Even though OBJ wouldn't be ready for that, but like they can still have, you know, those talented amount of receivers on their roster. I just want to, you know, touch one more point on Kyrie Elam.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the Buffalo Bills and the corners that they brought through the Sean McDermott-led defense over the years, they've only drafted two corners highly, and that is Tre'Davious White and Kyrie Elam. We know exactly what Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier did with Tre'Davious White. He's an all-pro. He's a top-five corner when healthy. The guy is special. We get that. But then you look at a lot of the other corners, and Dane Jackson, Levi Wallace, Taron Johnson, and then you look at some of the other guys that are good players but haven't really, you know, made that leap yet, but have been, you know, solid, formidable depth pieces like Cam Lewis and Sarah Neal.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Sean McDermott knows how to coach up cornerbacks and make them play solid. I mean, and you draft a guy 23rd overall with the amount of potential he has. Sean McDermott can take Kyrie and make him a sensational player in the NFL. Like, I'm excited for it.
Can you imagine having two all-pro cornerbacks on the same defense? Like, that's crazy. Like I'm just, because we know Trey's going to be here for the long haul, right? So he's already all-pro, elite cornerback in the league, you know, top five, you know, easily in my opinion. But man, if Kyer Elam can hit the ground running early, first couple of years, man, and make an impact we had two lockdown potential cornerbacks. Plus, you got the two guys behind you, two all pro. We could potentially have an all pro secondary all across the board, from cornerbacks all the way to safeties. That I don't know of another defense that has that. I'm not saying that you know the Bills are like special in that regard. But man, can you imagine what that would look like when you've got two all pro safeties and Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, assuming that Bean does what he has to do in extending Jordan Poyer, which I think he will. But then couple that with Trey White and then a young guy and Kyer Elam. You got that right, John. You got that right. The no fly zone. It ain't happening. You're just not going to be able to pass against that defense. You're just not going to be able to do it. And that is exactly the vision I believe that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier and them had as it pertained to the defense, and especially the secondary. They wanted guys, man, who are physical. They wanted guys who had a high floor, high ceiling guys with a lot of traits, and that's what you see. And especially the speed element. We cannot overstate the speed element because my man Kyrie can fly. He can fly. Oh, yeah. We know, Evan, that's exactly what Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean were trying to do, was increase the speed in the defense.
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. You know, we all saw what happened against us, against Tyreek Hill last year in the AFC divisional round. We cannot have stuff like that happen again, especially when a guy like Tyreek Hill is coming to your own division.
Right.
He's coming to Miami. Yeah. So, you know, adding a guy like Kyrie, you know, who runs a great 40, who can keep up, you know, with some of the faster players in the league. And, you know, now when healthy, when you have, you know, a guy like Tre'Davious White and then Kyrie Elam, Taron Johnson in the slot, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer behind him, that's as good as it gets in the NFL for a secondary. We already knew that the Bills were one of the top 3 to 4 secondaries in the NFL.
Right.
Now you had a guy like Kyrie Elam who, you know, can get coached up well to be a very good zone corner, but not only is already a very good man corner out the gate, plus the physicality and the energy he plays with.
Right.
That's something Trey White has never had across from him. He's always had that safe here and there play from Levi Wallace.
Right.
But he's never had another corner on the other side of him where Trey can just go, hey, like, just go get it, man. You know, play like a dog, play yourself, absolutely, you know, do your thing.
Absolutely.
And now he has that.
And then we're not going to, you know, hopefully we're not going to have to, you're not going to have to rely on Poyer and Hyde to have to, you know what I'm saying, come over there and give them some help. You know what I'm saying? They might early on, just depends on how everything works out. But, you know, from what I see, it doesn't look like they're going to need to help the guy at all, man. You know what I'm saying? So when you can allow both of your corners to basically, you know what I'm saying, defend without any safety help. Oh my gosh, these safeties, Hyde and Poyer, are going to be able to roam free. They're going to be able to roam free. And then that's not even talking about the defensive line. And I see Scott Blakely coming and talking about the D line. You know, I smell record interceptions. Yo, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to touch on that a little bit later in the show. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but man, it's hard not to get excited about what the defense can potentially be. And it's hard to even say that when we just came off of, you know, such a ranking as last year, like being the number one ranked defense in so many categories. So yeah, I'm excited about that, Evan. But you know who else I'm excited about, man? We're looking at the rookies. I'm excited about Khalil Shakir. Khalil Shakir has been making some noise in camp. You know, another rookie who's been doing his thing in camp. He's been balling, man. I mean, he's been balling. And when you have guys that are injured, like Jamison Crowder, it paves the way for guys like Khalil Shakir, who probably would not be getting the kind of reps that he's getting right now in camp. But you know what they say, the best ability is availability. And so when Crowder's out, it's next man up. I know that sounds cliche, but it's the truth. And the yeah. next man, he's been up and he's been showing out, man. Khalil Shakir has been doing his thing in camp. Very, very reminiscent, you know, and again, I hate these comparisons, you know what I'm saying? But it's just hard not to, especially when he's wearing number 10. I know you guys know what I'm talking about, man. The guy who used to wear number 10 before Cole Beasley donned it, you know what I'm saying? His first season. That's my man, Robert Woods. When you look at Khalil Shakir, Evan, man, do you see any resemblance of Robert Woods in his play? I know his early pads haven't come on yet, but just looking at his versatility and what he brings, what do you think?
Yeah, so coming out of college, I had Shakir comped as to Robert Woods. I thought they played very similar in the way they had the ball in their hands after the catch, just the way they brought in the ball. And just the way they kind of carry themselves on the field and just everything they did as a receiver kind of resembled one another from the college ranks to the NFL ranks. And you've seen reports early in camp from a lot of Bills media members, just the way Khalil Shakir kind of brings the ball in, you know, on some of these soft lob catches. Uh-huh. He brings him in with such a veteran presence. It's just, he's not even a rookie. He just kind of feels like he belongs there already. He's just fitting in very well. And, you know, that's great. You know, you lose a guy like Cole Beasley, you know, the Bills released him.
Right.
But now you feel comfortable. You have three guys in the slot now, Isaiah McKenzie, Jameson Crowder, and Khalil Shakir, that all look comfortable. They all look good. There's a chance that all three of them are going to be impactful players this season, even one being, you know, a seasoned veteran, one being here for a long time, and, you know, another one being a rookie. But I've liked what I've seen from Khalil Shakir so far. And I mean, I'll be attending camp sooner rather than later.
There we go.
So, you know, when that comes around, I can give like my own opinion from physically watching him in person on Khalil Shakir. Yeah. All I've seen is a few clips here and there. But I like what I've seen from Khalil. I like his double moves and his routes. I like the way, he uses his hips in his routes. I like the way he shakes the defender, even though sometimes it's not there. It might be a coach or like a little stand up pile on, but just envision it in itself. That's all we got right now. Right. But, you know, I like the way Khalil's bringing himself to camp. He's showing that if for some reason Isaiah McKenzie and Jameis Crowder are both out, hey, I can be that guy for a game.
Yeah, I mean, he's showing that it's not too big for him. That the stage is not too big for him. I mean, as a rookie, like you said, he's carrying himself like he's not even a rookie. You know what I'm saying? He's coming in. You know what I'm saying? You know the whole cliche. You know, with his hard hat on and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's coming to work. But he's performing though when he gets his opportunities on the field in camp, albeit, you know what I'm saying. But he's doing his thing. He's showing up. He's making an impact on the field. I wanted to go back and look at his draft profile coming out, and so you know, on Pro Football Network, Ian Cummings wrote this, and I wanted to read it. And we're looking at his profile. I mean, he's 5'11", 196. You know what I'm saying? He's bigger than we think. You know what I'm saying? He's not that small. Guy runs a 4.43, so he's got speed. Okay, but this is what Ian said. He said this. He said much of the buzz in the 2022 draft is clustered around the top receivers. Players like Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Jameson Williams, and Treylon Burks, they undoubtedly deserve the praise and attention. But the 2022 NFL draft receiver class spans far beyond them, and a player like Khalil Shakir could provide comparable value at a potential a couple of rounds later. And then he goes on to say this, his athletic profile. He says, Shakir possesses the explosiveness to gear up quickly after catches and cuts. Now, let's just pause right there. He has the explosiveness to gear up quickly after catches. After catches. What is the thing that we've been talking about that Josh Allen has been trying to improve upon his game in the offseason and what they want to do within the offense and with these receivers? It's yak. Yards after catch. Yards after reception. That's what they want. They want yards after the catch. And his athletic profile, according to Ian Cummings, says that, he has the explosiveness to gear up quickly after the catch, which tells me he's a yak guy. You get the ball in his hands in space, he can do whatever he has to do to get going quickly. He has the explosiveness. He has the agility. He has the acceleration to get going up north and south in a hurry, and that's exactly what we need out of these receivers, man. We need some guys who can get yak.
Yeah, then, so Sorry, really. I have a quick article from the Buffalo News about Shakir, just, you know, why we're on it.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a quicker little read. This was from yesterday. He showed good hands plucking a pass out of the air from Keenum that was a tad behind him, you know, just showing the ability to grab passes, you know, maybe outside of his frame, a little, you know, inside or whatever.
Right.
He's showing the ability to adjust to the catch, which is outstanding. Shakir showed a quick burst upfield on a run after the catch on a pass from Barkley late in the practice. So, like, just right, you mentioned the player profile, you know, everything they said about him pre-draft is showing right now in the Buffalo Bills training camp.
Yes.
So, you know, these player profiles are not lying. It's all, you know, being showed on the field. And then Shakir ran a good route down the right sideline, giving himself room to adjust to the outside and hauled in a pass of about 25 yards from Barkley against Elijah Griffin. So as of right now, you know, Shakir isn't going up against the ones completely, but, you know, he's dominating our depth players.
Yeah. And you can still see that. Yeah. And you can see the skill set there. You know what I'm saying? So regardless of who he's matched up against, you can still see that he has a skill set and it's matching up with the draft profiles that came out about him. Just to continue on that point, what Ian continued to say was this. He said, chief among Shakir's operational strengths is his work at the catch point. Shakir shows off absurd instincts. He can track the ball and make challenging adjustments with little strain, which goes right to your point when you were talking about him catching a pass that was kind of behind him. Like he can do it. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't have to be perfect on him, right on him. The dude's got skills, man. He's got skills to pay the bills, baby. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we want. And kudos to Brandon Bean, man, and his staff for finding a guy like this, and then having the patience and the stones, right, to wait so long when we know after the fact that so many GMs were like, yo, they were mad at the Bills for getting him and for trading up when they did, because, you know, this guy could have gone earlier in, you know, than where he actually did go. But man, he's, when you look at the wide receiver position, you got Diggs, you got Davis, right, you got McKenzie, you got Crowder, you know what I'm saying? A question mark, right? We don't know because he's been injured. But then beyond that, you've got Shakir. I think that the Buffalo Bills, man, are in good hands at the wide receiver position, not just this year, but in the future as well. Oh, my gosh. And, yo, off the top, we've got to get into the Super Chat, man. Bills Mafia comes in. Yo, appreciate you, Bills Mafia. And he says, imagine this. Imagine Allen, Diggs, Davis, OBJ. What do you think? You know, I had thought about it before. And I was like, yo, it's intriguing, right? It really is. I mean, just from a talent perspective, we know that OBJ is a very talented, very skilled wide receiver. We understand that. My thing is this, and I'm not even going to go out here and start talking about like character issues or bashing them to see, you would say, well, you know, he's you know what I'm saying, you know, not a locker room guy. I don't know, man. You just never know. You know what I'm saying? When you get in an organization that's about winning, that could change a whole lot about your perceived attitude issues. You know what I'm saying? We've seen the likes of guys like that had that moniker, right? That had that persona. Randy Moss goes to New England. He's a freaking, you know what I'm saying? He's a model citizen. You know what I'm saying? So it just depends. I don't think that if OBJ came to Buffalo, that he would be toxic for the locker room. I don't think so. There's too many leaders in the locker room, right? And then if you're smart and you look at this team, and you know this is a Super Bowl caliber team, a legit contender, you ain't gonna mess that up. You know what I'm saying? And so just from that perspective, I think he would fit in. My only thing is this: he's been injured, man. He had a very serious injury. And if we were to bring him in, I don't even think he would even play this. I don't know how far out. I'm guessing maybe midseason. I don't know. I don't know his projection, but I'm just, for me, I like what we have right now. You know what I'm saying? And I like Shakir. I like McKenzie. You know what I'm saying? Even Crowder. You know what I'm saying? So it really just depends, man. I mean, that's enticing. That really is enticing. But what it's going to do is it's going to push a lot of these younger guys further down the depth chart, man. But, you know, that's just my opinion. I don't know, Evan. What do you think, man, about the possibility of OBJ?
You know, the talent there, Odell Beckham Jr. is one heck of a talented football player. But like you mentioned, just bringing in a guy that's going to be knocking down our younger players on the depth chart just isn't totally for me. I don't want to see another year of Gabe Davis losing touches to a veteran receiver like Odell Beckham Jr. You know, Odell can play everywhere. He can play outside and in the slot. So, you know, the player there works. But again, he's recovering from an injury. You have little to no idea of when this guy is going to be returning. And let's just say the Bills are on a hot streak. You know, let's say we start the year 8-0, we're 7-1, we're 6-2.
Come on, baby.
We're having a great year to start the season, right? Odell Beckham returns. You have to play Odell Beckham. Like, you can't play a guy that's not that talented. You have to play him. So, you know, if he's on the field, I don't want him, you know, messing up any chemistry issues, even though I feel like he could fit right in, but I don't want him, you know, knock anything. I don't want Allen to force feed him balls or anything like that. So in my opinion, Odell Beckham Jr., I would love to have OBJ on this team, but realistically, I just don't think it's a realistic option for the Bills. Plus, I like our guys, like you mentioned, Shakir, Crowder, McKenzie, Davis, Diggs, Knox, O'Howard, Singletary. Like, there's so many. Everyone in the chat is mentioning there's only one ball to go around. Richard right here, he mentions, that's right, there's only one ball.
Only one.
So, there's only one. You can't. And OBJ is a guy that's going to command, you know, 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 targets a game right there. Yeah. He's your second guy. I mean, that's it. He's your second guy. Davis is your third receiver now. We want Davis to jump. We don't want Davis going into his fourth year, you know, on a prove-it year, because the first 3 years we've shut him down with veteran receivers. I'm not really for it. I would love to have him on the team. Talent-wise, one of the best talented receivers of all time, but I don't need him. We don't need him.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm with you, man. Just because of where we are, you know what I'm saying, in our development, you know, I just don't want to see that happen anymore. You know, and I think this is a time for Gabe, you know. Now if Odell was willing to take, you know, third receiver reps or whatever, I don't know. But it just doesn't seem feasible to me or realistic, you know what I'm saying? That's a good. Oh man, I wonder if, you know what I'm saying? That's like one of those things. But when you come back down to reality, you know what I'm saying, you start drinking the Kool-Aid, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But you
if
know
this
what
was with, Madden, I'm all for it. If this was Madden, I'm all for it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But we're not playing Madden, you know what I'm saying? So, man, I love the way our receiver room looks currently as it is. But you know what? Who else? Since we're still on the topic of the Bills rookies, man, who ain't playing around. And Evan, I'm gonna kick this off to you, man. Is our rookie Terrell Bernard, man? Terrell Bernard, man. He just continues to make noise. He continues to impress. You know, and at camp, you know, one thing that I found interesting was that I heard defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier talk about this when he was interviewed. I think it was, I don't know if it was today or maybe in a couple of days ago, but he was talking about early on in the, they were getting some work, like first and second down work on the defense. And what we saw was a base 4-3, three linebackers, which included Edmonds, Milano, and Bernard. And that guy, and Evan, I know you've talked a lot about Bernard, man, and his potential within his defense and kind of his probably even like his versatility, right? From being maybe like the third linebacker, you know, in the base 4-3 set, but then also can even provide you some versatility in certain nickel packages against certain matchups, you know, that we'll face. Talk to me, man, about what you think about Terrell Bernard and what he's been doing so far in camp.
Yeah, I love the way Terrell Bernard has been used and the way he's been playing and showing out in camp thus far. Like we talked about with Kyir Elam earlier, like he's just there. He wants to make his presence known. He's showing some of these veterans that he's not here to just mess around. He's here to play. He's here to be an impactful player early on.
Yeah.
And, you know, Terrell Bernard was drafted in the third round. So that third round pick is nothing to mess around with. It's not like he was a sixth or seventh round pick. Terrell Bernard was drafted in the third round to a team that's competing for a Super Bowl.
No doubt.
Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Leslie Frazier obviously have a plan in mind for a guy like Terrell Bernard. And whether that's, you know, stationing him in and out for maybe Edmonds or Milano here and there, using him on certain defensive packages in a big nickel formation, taking out Taron Johnson. You mentioned, Leslie Frazier talked about in his presser just the other day of, you know, the base 4-3.
Yeah.
you know, you got those three linebackers. That's Bernard, Milano, and Edmonds. And then you got your flat four on your defensive line. That's going to be huge. That's going to be huge against defenses that would want to run the ball, because that's defensive versatility. Right. Not only can you stop the run, but you can just now stop the pass, because Terrell Bernard is a 6'1" linebacker that weighs just around 225 pounds. The guy can run like a safety. He can cover.
Yes.
He's faster than Matt Milano. And Matt Milano has been one of the top coverage linebackers in the league since he's entered. Right. So you got all this going for you. Now you just add another guy. That's just going to be kind of like a Swiss Army knife. I'm just saying this. He could be like the Isaiah McKenzie of the defense.
Oh,
he's going to be everywhere. He's going to be everywhere.
Everywhere.
He's going to be everywhere. Yep.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, man. And you know what I like about him that I've learned is that, man, he's a leader. He's a leader. He was a captain at Baylor too, and so the guy comes in, man, with these leadership qualities, man. Which I mean, you just can't like poo-poo over that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's important, especially in this regime. They love that. They like that type of character, man. And it just means that it means a whole lot. To the entire team, right? But this guy, man, he's got it. He's got the skills. He's got the versatility, which is what I love. You put him in that early down package, you know what I'm saying? If we're playing against run heavy teams, well, you know, we used to have AJ Klein in that role, but now you get a guy who's way more athletic than AJ Klein, who can cover as well. And so you're not going to have a guy who's a liability in coverage. You know what I'm saying? If you're going up against these run looks and you got play action and oh my gosh, you know, and you got a matchup against a linebacker who you use for, you know, run stopping downs, but now he's having to, you know, cover a tight end or something like that. You don't have to worry about that because you got a guy like Bernard who can cover, who's got the speed, man. And so that's phenomenal. And then, you know, when you look at bigger packages, so I think you had mentioned it before, Evan, maybe it was on a previous show. You had talked about like say, for instance, if we need to sub Teron Johnson out at nickel, right?
Yeah.
For a guy like Terrell Bernard, if we want to stop a guy like Derrick Henry, who we're going to be playing in week two, you know what I'm saying, against some of those more dominant run first teams offenses, how much of an impact do you think he can make, or how much better do you think he will make the defense, especially the run defense, against those certain looks and packages?
Well, the way you see the Sean McDermott-led defense is it likes to bring the safeties down low in the box and play within the box.
Mm-hmm.
But now you add a guy like Terrell Bernard, and not only can you still have guys like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde step into the box and make tackles, but you don't have to really just rely on a smaller nickel corner to make those tougher tackles on a bigger running back. You're going to have a guy like Terrell Bernard, who is a third legit linebacker in there, but right, still moves like a safety that can still cover like a safety, and will be out there just, you know, being so much more versatile for the defense. He's just going to make everyone's lives around him more easier just because of that versatility and the way he moved around the line of scrimmage and just the defensive formation. Mm-hmm. It's going to be huge. People might just be looking at it now. Oh, you look at the draft pick. Oh, yeah, we have Edmonds. We have Milano. Why would you draft a linebacker? Well, first of all, he's not Tremaine Edmonds. He's not Tremaine Edmonds' replacement, and he's most certainly not Matt Milano's replacement. He's a guy that's going to be a versatile player on this defense. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, if Milano goes down, you can
insert him.
A guy in Terrell Bernard. He might not be as good, but he's still a valuable player that can still play that position that Matt Milano commands. So overall, like, adding Terrell Bernard to this defense is going to be huge. It's going to be something that Bills fans haven't seen in a minute.
It is going to be so huge. And you know what? I was listening to Leslie Frazier talk about it. He was talking about how the defense is different, man. It's like it's not like it's like it's been before. He was talking about, you know, guys like Terrell Bernard, but then he was also talking about the defensive line, you know what I'm saying? The defensive line up front, and how he's like, yo, I've never had a line this versatile and this stout before, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm coming in with the question like, yo, when you look at the defense, man, we look at the pieces that we added, can the 2021 number one defense get better? Like, is it possible for us to get even better than last year?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills defense got statistically overall better. Mm-hmm. It's hard for number one defenses to repeat that same performance that they had the year prior, just the way you look at NFL defenses throughout the years. But at the same time, Sean McDermott-led defenses have normally been amongst the top NFL defenses throughout the, you know, the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So, you know, adding guys like Von Miller, Tim Settle, Daquan Jones, Ed Oliver getting better, Jermaine Edmonds and Matt Milano going into another season, bringing in a guy like Kyer Elam, Dean Jackson having another season under his belt, Hyde and Poyer, you know, returning, Terrell Bernard, just the amount of playmakers that are on this defense, like realistically, or even Greg Rousseau, AJ Epenesa, Boogie Basham, all taking another year
all these guys,
into their career. Like, I'm just naming players. And I know on paper, this looks like it could be the number one defense overall in every statistic. And I think it can be. Like, it really has the potential to be that good of a defense. I think it could be. If not, it's a shoe-in to be a top five to top six defense in the NFL this coming season.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hands down, man. Hands down. And you know where I think that we're going to see the most impact on the defense is right up front, man. Right up front in the trenches, that defensive line. That defensive line so far on paper and really based upon what we've seen so far in camp, you know, in the offseason, looks freaking dominant, man. Dominant. I mean, they were giving Allen and the offense some fits early on in camp to where Allen was getting frustrated. Like these dudes, man, are coming after it. Frazier's talked about it. We got, like, guys like Tim Settle, Daquan Jones, these guys who are big, strong, athletic guys. And what it's going to do for the run defense, because we know that was, you know, if we were to critique any part of the defense last year, which was, it's kind of hard to do so, right? When you got a number one ranked defense, it would be the run defense, right? I mean, and the rush defense, it wasn't all that bad. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Well, like when you look at it statistically, the rush defense wasn't all that bad. You know, when you compare it throughout the rest of the league. And I think they were like 15 in rush defense, somewhere in that range, giving up just under 120 yards per game against the run. But we know what kind of like amplified it, right, was when we got you know, just obliterated by the Colts and Jonathan Taylor, you know, the Patriots running all over us. You know what I'm saying? When Derrick Henry got loose. And so a couple of those games against those types of offenses, you know, really, really, really magnified some of our issues against the run. But when you look at what they've done again, you know, across the defensive line, how much more confident are you that the run defense this year is going to be a bit more stout than it was last year?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure according to PFF last year, Greg Rousseau was the fifth graded best run defender in the NFL as a rookie. He's only going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, you have guys getting, you know, going into year two and year three, like AJ Epenesa and Boogie Basham. They're only going to get better. You bring in a guy like Tim Settle and Daquan Jones. And Daquan Jones is going to be that, you know, run-stopping, big-body defensive plugger in, you know, the middle of the D-line. So he'll be a huge acquisition right there. And 716 Truth mentions that as well. You know, Tim Settle's going to be huge. Ed Oliver improving going into year four is going to be huge. There's been multiple reports throughout camp that Ed Oliver had one play in particular that was outstanding. James Cook, it was either James Cook or Devin Singletary was on a stretch play, and Ed Oliver just bursted through the D line and just was par for par, step for step on the back. So, and you know what,
I don't want to interrupt you, man, but I'm glad you brought up Ed Oliver, man, because, dude, I think Ed Oliver is going to freaking have a monstrous year this year, dude. I think, oh my gosh, I'm excited about Ed Oliver, man. I think he's going to get double digit sacks, man, from the interior position. I think that because of the presence of Daquan Jones next to him, like, he's going to have a freaking dog of a one tech next to him. You know what I'm saying? He didn't really have that in Star. And then, you know what I'm saying, as much as we liked Harrison Phillips, you know what I'm saying, and as good as he kind of came on, you know, around the tail end of the year last year, Daquan Jones, man, is better than them dudes, man. And he's a bigger guy. He's athletic. And then also Tim Settle. So, like, I think that just having those guys right there next to him plus Von Miller plus Groot is going to leave him one-on-one with a lot of guards who don't want to see him. And my man, Ed Oliver, the Brahma Bull himself, is going to have a ridiculous season.
Yeah, and, you know, sticking with the run defense, another player that I forgot to mention who might not even, you know, be on a lot of Bills fans' minds right now is Shaq Lawson.
I'm glad you brought him up, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Like Shaq Lawson isn't the prettiest player. He's not the flashiest player. He's not the sexiest player, right? He never has been. But while he was here in Buffalo, the number one thing he did well and did it very well was stopping the run. Like that was his demeanor here. He's stopping the run was something that he did very well game in and game out. Mm-hmm. He never was, you know, the biggest sack guy. He never led the team in sacks. He never led the league in sacks.
Right. Right.
But he was one of the best graded run defenders in the NFL. And also, you know, a guy in Jordan Phillips, he's going to be a big body in the middle who always has energy to burst through the D line or the O line. So that's going to be huge as well. Just the amount of players that Brandon Bean has brought in or brought back is huge for this D line. Like you mentioned, in the one presser that Frazier had, he never had this much defensive line versatility. Like, never. I think we have some like, some great players. Tim Settle, who could be a diamond in the rough.
I love Tim Settle, man. He was buried in that defensive line, but with that was full of first round draft picks. So like it was hard for him to really get on the field. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But dude, you know what I'm saying? He started in any defensive line across the league. Like that guy is very good. Very good up front, man. And you know what? Somebody had made mention of this earlier, and I can't find the comment. But they were talking about, I don't know if it was Scott early on, but and then you had brought it up too, I think, Evan, about not having to bring the safeties down in the box so often. You know what I'm saying? Because Frazier had said that. This is what he said in his presser. Frazier said this. He says, you need to be able to mix in a little bit more split safety than single high, and that means being stout against the run. And he was talking about that in the context of his defensive line, right? And being as versatile as they are now and as stout as they are now against the run with guys like Tim Settle and Daquan Jones, even bringing back Jordan Phillips, and then looking across the board. Like having guys like that who are that stout against the run means that they can no longer – that they don't have to bring Jordan Poirier in the box. They don't have to bring Micah Hyde in the box no more as often unless they just want to do it, you know what I'm saying, for some blitz packages or whatever. But when you got guys who are stout like that across the board, and we know how much Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott want to just rush for and drop the rest back in coverage. So if you got a defensive line like that, that is stout against the run because that's where it starts, and you can go back and you've got, you know, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poirier just kind of in the back, man, with split safety looks, just roaming the field. Oh my gosh, man. Like good luck.
It's going to be scary.
Good luck moving the ball against a defense like that, man. And we haven't even talked about the linebackers. That's just the defensive line and the back end. Like the ripple effect is going to be huge across the D-line. And I think it was Scott who even mentioned it earlier. I'm trying to find it, man. If you can find it, Evan, go ahead and pull it up for me. But he had talked about earlier about interceptions, about how the defensive line, the improvements across the defensive line is going to mean interceptions for my guys in the back end. And man, look, that is so true, because we know that these positions, man, that they work hand in hand together, man. The front works in with the back end. The back end works with the front. You know what I'm saying? When you have lockdown secondary, you know what I'm saying? That means that quarterbacks are not going to have the time in the pocket, right? But if you have a stout defensive line, who are you going to throw it to? You got a stout defensive line, man, coming after them. And Josh Allen, and they saw it earlier in camp. I think it was like day two or something like that. We're talking about like Josh Allen was getting frustrated to the point to where he had to walk off and cool off because defensive, like, because these guys were tipping balls at the line of scrimmage, man. They were coming after it. And granted, pads are not on, right? And the O-line, you know what I'm saying, can't really get as physical as they would like. You know what I'm saying? But the fact of the matter is that these guys across the defensive line are dogs, man. These guys are dogs. And yes, yeah, Scott Blakely, appreciate that. Yeah, Scott, yeah. With our new D-line, I smell record interceptions. That is not even that is no exaggeration. Like that can be very possible if the defensive line can remain healthy, knock on wood, and be as stout across the front as we think they are. just against the run, and then you've got Von Miller coming in, blazing off the edge. You've got Groot. You even got AJ Epenesa, man, who's I think we heard like there's an AJ Epenesa sighting. I don't know how long we've been waiting for that to happen, but even he's starting to make some splashes, you know, in camp. So, you know, if you cannot tell, I am incredibly excited about the potential of this defense, man, and just the improvements that we've made and what it's going to do for the defense as a whole. And like you had mentioned, Evan, though we may not, you know, be the number one defense again, which is fine. I mean, I don't care. Top five defense in the league, it's all good, especially if we're more balanced defense across the line, right? We know the strength last year was in the back end, the secondary. If our strength now be you can add to the strength, the defensive line, pass rush too, and run stopping, good luck. You know what I'm saying? Good freaking luck. The defensive line is going to be dominant, man, and there's going to be so much that's going to happen across the board, man. I can't wait for it. I can't wait for it. Is anybody else out there, man, waiting for it? Golly.
Yeah, no, like I literally cannot wait. So August 5th, they're returning back to Orchard Park to have the red versus blue scrimmage. I literally cannot wait for that to happen, because you know this is when these guys are going to, you know, show out a little bit. Obviously, they're not going to be going 110 miles an hour like they would in an actual game, because it's a scrimmage training camp. But these guys are going to be going. You're going to be seeing, you know, the D-line getting going, the offensive line playing. And, you know, hopefully by then, maybe Roger Saffold's back. You know, hopefully Spencer Brown's back. Some other guys are back. Yeah. And then, you know, you'll see the true O-line versus the true D-line. And that will be a sight to see. That's honestly probably the one thing I'm going to be looking at while going to these training camps, is how the O-line and D-line are combating one another. Because again, Sean McDermott always states it. Everyone states it. It always starts in the trenches, whether that's offensively or defensively. It always starts in the trenches, and that's how everything gets going for the Buffalo Bills. So that's going to be like the most key factor I'm going to be looking at for training camp.
No doubt. And we got a certified troll up in the house, man. A certified troll. Normally I don't give you guys any, you know what I'm saying, any light. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to entertain you today. 13 seconds. Oh, wow. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like that's old, bro. You know what I'm saying? Chiefs Kingdom. Hey, circle October 16th. I hope you're ready for it. I hope you're ready for it. Because I'm telling you right now. Let me tell you right now, baby. Clear my throat. Let me tell you right now. Y'all ain't going to be the same without Tyreek Hill. Okay? Tyreek Hill covered a multitude of sins, right, in KC. You know what I'm saying? You're going to find out real quickly that Juju Smith ain't Tyreek Hill. MVS ain't Tyreek Hill. Sky Moore ain't Tyreek Hill. I don't care who you throw up there. I don't care what kind of Kool-Aid you drinking out there in Chiefs Kingdom. I don't care how much barbecue. Y'all must be drunk and all that stuff. Look, Tyreek Hill was everything for you. Everything for you. And you're going to find out real quickly how much you miss him. And especially come October 16th. Get ready for it, baby. Get ready for it. And I can't wait for it, man. But that's all the light you're going to get, okay? You trolling her over here and Bill's. I'm glad you. Thanks for the view. Appreciate the view, though. You know what I'm saying? Appreciate the view. But and Earl talks about Casey won't make the playoffs.
If Casey doesn't make the playoffs, that would be a strip.
Laugh against that division. Good luck. Good luck. OT Spears, whatever your name is. Good luck getting out of your own division. Okay. Good luck with that, baby. And we'll see. We'll see you come October 16th. But, man, you know, hey, we are, you know, just under an hour into the show, Evan. And man, yo, time is flying. It doesn't even feel like we've been on that long, man. But do me this favor, Bills Mafia, and all you fanatics, you crazy fanatics who can't wait to see Buffalo Bills football, do me this favor. Smash that like button right now like you've never smashed it before. I don't care if you break your keys off the keyboard or your mouse, do whatever you got to do, but smash that like button. Let everybody know what's popping, man. We got 173 up in this building watching us. Appreciate you so much, man. All of you guys who are watching on YouTube, of you guys who are watching on Facebook, all of that, appreciate you so very, very much. But yo, man, we got to keep it moving, Evan. We got to keep it moving, man. I can talk about the defense and just how incredible they're going to be this year, but we have to move on to the offense, man. We got to move on to the offense, and we know earlier in camp, right? Earlier in camp, They had some issues, man. There were some struggles. I think it was day two, if I'm not mistaken, man. Some growing pains, man, in the offense. And Allen, like I had mentioned earlier, man, Allen was getting frustrated. And I think a lot of it could possibly be due to the fact of that the old line, right? There's no pads, right? You know what I'm saying? There's no pads. And so when you get these guys just coming off the board, you know, I mean, just flying off the line, talking about the defense, you know what I'm saying? It ain't really, you know what I'm saying, as fair. It's not really comparing apples to apples. But nevertheless, they had some early growing pains against the defense. And that's to be expected when you have a brand-new OC and Ken Dorsey, and they're still working out the kinks. They're working out communications, right? We saw clips of Josh Allen even, like, talking with Diggs, and even almost kind of like running a route, you know, with Diggs, kind of letting him know, I guess, assuming, you know, what he was wanting to see and certain things. So this is what you want to see, that kind of communication. You know what I'm saying? And as great of a rapport as Diggs and Allen have, right, you can't just take it for granted, right, and think that, okay, well, the next year is just going to be the same. I mean, you got to continue to work on that. And they've been working on it since camp started. And even though they had some early growing pains, Evan, I think Josh got his groove back, man. I think Josh and the offense got their groove back, because they have been, by all accounts, man, and by all reports that we've been hearing, the offense has been lighten things up, man, and day three and day four in camp.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm pretty sure it's either day three or day four, but it could be day three. But you know, when Allen was working on 11-on-11 drills within the red zone, mm-hmm. he was 13-of-15, and 7 of those passes were completed for touchdowns. They went to the likes of Stephon Diggs, Isaiah McKenzie, Gabe Davis, Dawson Knox, etc., getting all of our guys, you know, the ball, yeah. Not just going to Diggs, not just going to Davis, not just going to the two top guys. He was getting everybody involved. And that's phenomenal, going up against the number one defense in the NFL. And I get it. Pads aren't yet. Everyone's just kind of getting back into the groove and the swing of things. But for Allen to have 13 completions and over half of those being touchdowns.
Yeah.
That is absolutely outstanding. And yes. Allen has been one of the best red zone quarterbacks, if not the best red zone quarterback in the NFL over the past, you know, 3 to 4 years with his rushing ability and his passing ability. So just kind of picking up where he left off is all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And he just basically showed the defense, like, hey, you got the first 2 days on me. You know, I came back a little rusty. I wasn't myself. You know, we're getting back into the swing of things. Got the new OC, got some new targets to play with. But when I get on, you know, locked with those targets, when I get connected and I feel comfortable with those targets, yeah, guess what? You're going to be the number one defense in the league, but not against me on the practice field, because Josh Allen's going to carve him up. Josh Allen's going to carve him up, just like any defense.
That's what he does, dude. That's what he does. You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes, you know, he may have a slow start, whatever, but once he figures it out, it's a freaking wrap. Like Josh Allen, Bills Mafia, enjoy. This dude is freaking elite. One of the best in the league right now. He's going to have... man. He has so many weapons, man. He has so many weapons. And I want to show you this, because this is what happened. This is the stuff that we can expect to see happening this year for the Buffalo Bills offense, man. Josh and the offense are going to, and if they can hit the ground running, unlike last year where they kind of had a little lull, if they can hit the ground running early and start on fire, and just continue that upward trajectory throughout the season, lights out, game over. Kind of like what happened right here. And I want to show you this, because, yo, my man Josh was doing him dirty. And you know who else was doing him dirty? Lil Dirty was doing him dirty today. He was doing dirty. Check this out, man. I want you guys to see this. Just a little snippet of what was going on, man, when Josh got cooking. Check this out. Ooh. Get it dirty. Yo, let me turn that thing back again. Look at Lil Dirty, man. Look, now we've been so used to Lil Dirty, right? Being that gadget guy in the rounds and stuff like that. But now we get to see him running some different kind of rounds. Look at what he did, man. Just watch him. Oh my gosh, this guy is gonna be freaking ridiculous. Check it out. Yep. One more time. Oh, there it is. Back it up. Back it up. Yep. Did y'all see that? Did y'all see who that was? Check it out. One more time. Whoop. You see that number seven? That's on Teron Johnson. That's on Teron Johnson. One of the best nickel corners in the league. And you've got my man Lil Durty right now, who's finally, in his, like, for the first time in his career, getting some very respectable touches and targets and he's just having the opportunities that he's never had before, and he's putting my man Teron Johnson in the spin cycle right here. Yep, look at that, dude. Teron's not even in the frame. That's gonna be so good, man. Like, how excited are you to see that happening, man, on a Sunday to Sunday? Tay, what you look. Look, I ain't even gonna entertain that, man. Look, come on, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like when you're good, you're good. It doesn't matter. It's good against good. Some guys are gonna win, other guys are gonna win. That's how it is in camp. But my man Diggs, I mean not Diggs, I almost call him Diggs, running routes like Diggs. My man a little dirty, right, man. He did Teron Johnson dirty right there, man. And Teron Johnson is a very good corner. But this is some of the things that we can expect to see, Evan, out of the offense, man.
Yeah, no, for sure. When you got a guy like Isaiah McKenzie taking another leap in this offense, that's going to be huge. Because, you know, last year, Isaiah McKenzie kind of found himself as more of a refounded slot receiver than an overall gadget player. You know, there were still implemented times where he was doing those end arounds and those jet sweeps and all the motions, you know, and whatever. Yeah. But like we mentioned, when we think of Isaiah McKenzie, we always turn back to that New England Patriots game. You know, when he had that huge game, it was like 12 receptions, 100 yards and a touchdown. Everyone keeps mentioning that game, and rightfully so. You know, I'm gonna say it's straightforward. I was a guy who had my opinions on Isaiah McKenzie. I didn't think he was gonna be that guy to take the next step to be the starting slot receiver of the Buffalo Bills. I'm just gonna be honest. I didn't think he was gonna be that guy. I thought he's been in this offense for too long. I thought he's been in the league for too long, and just to kind of give him that starting slot role, it just wasn't in the best of the Bills' favors, for my opinion. Yeah. So I thought Jamison Crowder was gonna be that guy. But now when I'm looking at it, when I'm seeing these videos of Isaiah McKenzie, when training camp clips and news and notes, everything about Isaiah McKenzie has been coming out, Isaiah McKenzie could easily be the starting slot for the Buffalo Bills. By week one, he could be the starting slot inside next to Diggs and, you know, Davis outside. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we gave him a two-year extension for a reason. Bean, McDermott, and Dorsey, obviously all trust him. Allen obviously trusts him. Everyone in the receiving room loves the guy. He's going to be an impactful player. I forgot which one of it was. It might have been one of the BF guys, but they tweeted, like, I wouldn't be surprised if McKenzie had 40-plus receptions this year. Like, it's easily that it could happen. I mean, when you look at the Buffalo Bills slot receivers over the years, like, Cole Beasley is easily a guy that's going to command 65-plus receptions.
Yeah.
I don't think McKenzie's on Cole Beasley's level, but, you know, he can give you a little more than Beasley could here. You know, he's a little more versatile. He's got the downfield speed and that ability to do different things in his offense. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets 50 plus receptions if he has a refined role in his offense.
Dude. I mean, because when you think about what you think about Beasley's reception, Beasley had 80 receptions out of the slot. You know what I'm saying? So, like it's if Allen is trusting McKenzie like this. Underneath, you got Diggs taking coverage away, right? And then you've got Davis on the outside doing his thing. You got a guy as quick and fast as McKenzie underneath. I don't know who's going to be able to. I mean, I don't know who's going to be able to defend that. I mean, that guy's he's fast. Like McKenzie is not. He's no joke. He's like wet soap. You know what I'm saying? Like the dude is he's slick, man. And I'm glad that he's finally getting his opportunity. You know what I'm saying? To prove what he can do. And I'm with you, man. I wasn't sure of the role that he was going to have coming into this year. I wasn't sure about that, man, because like you had mentioned, he's an aging guy, right? But man, I'm so glad that I am not the GM of this team. I'm so glad that I'm not the GM of this team because these guys know what they're doing. Sean McDermott and the coaching staff know exactly what they're doing. They seen this potential out of McKenzie. All they were waiting on was this chance, right? And time. And now Little Dirty has his time. He now he has his chance. And by all accounts, he's doing his thing and he's showing up in camp. And even, you know, possibly taking the role from a guy like Jamison Crowder, who has more experience, starting experience at the slot position, due to just being injured, man. And then on top of that, you get a guy like Khalil Shakir, the rookie, you know, who has that inside outside versatility as well. So we're looking very good, very good, at the wide receiver position. What is John saying, man? Evan, go ahead and read that.
He goes, he has Roscoe Parrish, but stays healthy.
Oh man, don't remind me of Roscoe Parrish, man. Don't remind me of Roscoe. Yeah,
like I was a little too young for those days.
Yeah, man, Roscoe was a small dude. He was probably 170, soaking wet. But he was just glass. He could not stay healthy for anything, man. But the guy was fast. He was fast and he was a burner, no doubt about it. But I think McKenzie, man, is way more skilled than Roscoe Parrish, way more skilled than him. And so when you look at McKenzie, man, in the offense, golly, man, sky's the limit, dude. Sky is the limit. Dilly, pull that up. Dilly Dale comes in, man, talking about Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson getting cut, fam. That's a possibility. I wasn't even going to touch on the running backs, but man, how possible is that? Yeah, might as well.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility because when you look at it, you already have, first of all, you drafted a guy with a similar skill set, you know what I'm saying, in James Cook. Now, we know what Brandon Bean does. This is what he does in the offseason before the draft starts. He looks at the weaknesses of his team. He tries to fill as many of those holes as possible in free agency. So that way, when he goes into the draft, he's not having to be desperate. He doesn't have to be desperate, right? To select some guys. So when he went after J.D. McKissic and that fell through, and then he brings in Duke Johnson, that wasn't the end of it. That was him filling a hole. But we knew that he was going to target somebody in the draft, and he targeted him early in James Cook. So now you've got James Cook and Duke Johnson. Okay, similar skill sets, right? Similar skill sets, but man, James Cook is lighting it up in camp. He's lighting up. You've got guys like Josh Allen talking about, gloating about how good he is and what he's done, and Stephon Diggs talking about him too, that can't be understated, right? When vets, elite guys, can look at this guy, a rookie, and be like, he's doing this thing. And then when Josh Allen just jokingly, you know, calls him Jimbo, you know what I'm saying? Like gave him a nickname. You know, you got to be doing pretty well, man. When your vets are creating nicknames, man, and talking about you, man, in the way that these guys are talking about James Cook, it's very possible that Duke Johnson could be cut, because let's talk about it, Evan. When you look at the running back room, right? We've got Motor Singletary, we got James Cook, we got Zach Moss, we got Duke Johnson. Just those four. I'm not even going to include Tyrone Jones because we know he's a special teams guy. Okay. Looking past this year, I don't see how we keep Duke Johnson and James Cook, similar guys, on the roster just past this year. Not even including this year alone, but just – and if you're not going to keep Duke Johnson, you know, past this year, then why even keep him this year when you have a guy like James Cook who's already, you know, doing the same thing? And then you look at Motor in this contract year, and you've got Zach Moss who you know, you can hold on, you know, to for at least another year, you know, until you find another replacement if you want to keep that running back by committee type of thing going. I don't know how Duke Johnson is gonna make the roster, man. It's possible. What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, so I'm gonna start with a running back that people, you know, kind of have just faded over, and that is Zach Moss. Mm-hmm. People might not like Zach Moss. People might still have their optimistic viewpoints on Zach Moss. I'm a guy that is still a little more higher on Moss than some people. I think he dealt with an injury last year, and McDermott and Brandon Bean touched on that a lot, that it affected his cutting ability, cutting upfield and cutting through those lanes.
Right.
And you're hearing a lot of reports that as of right now, Zach Moss looks rejuvenated. Mm. He looks like a different back. He looks a lot better than he did last year in camp, and you know, just last year overall. So wow. Zach Moss is a player that's, you know, stepping up big time, and he wants to make this roster. He knows he's on the brink of not making this roster if he has a bad camp.
Yeah.
Then you go over to Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary is kind of in that middle of a Duke Johnson running back and a James Cook running back. He's kind of like that back where he's not too similar to Johnson, but he's not too similar to Cook. He's just a good overall running back. You're keeping Singletary. He had a pretty good year last year. And then James Cook. You know, you invest that second round pick on him, and he's a phenomenal receiver. He can play in the slot. You know, he can, you know, line him up next to Allen to play the positional running back spot. He does it all. But then you look over to a guy like Duke Johnson. Why do you need Duke Johnson? We just said what Devin Singletary and James Cook do. That's literally what Duke Johnson will do for you. And why do you want to keep a roster spot open for a guy like Duke Johnson when you can just keep three running backs, right? Zach Moss, James Cook, and Devin Singletary.
And all three of them, though, when you look at it, Motor Singletary, James Cook, and Zach Moss all provide something different. Like, yes. So you got Motor, you know, he's a cut. I mean, you know what I'm saying? He'll make you miss in a phone booth type of thing. Right. But you know, you give him carries. I mean, the guy can produce, right? He's not, we know he doesn't have the long speed, but we know the guy can make people miss, right? The first defender is not going to tackle him. And then he's gotten stronger too. So, and even there are some points in the year last year where I thought, man, Motor is probably like a more power back, showing to be more of a power back than Zach Moss was. But you know, and that's a good point that you brought up about Zach Moss and his injury. So now you shift over and you look at James Cook, and you know that he's more of your receiving back, possibly even your third down back, right, out of the backfield, more like a James White was to the Patriots with Tom Brady, right, coming out of the backfield, a guy that you can not only trust out of the backfield, but that you can line up in the slot, maybe even line up out wide. You can do those kind of things, right? Give him receiver routes, put him in the slot, double slots, whatever. I mean, the sky's the limit with the guy because he's a great receiving back. But then you got a guy like Zach Moss who's healthy now and coming back now. We got a little more swag to it. You know what I'm saying? It's feeling this thing this year and can provide that power run element that we needed last year that we didn't get like we expected, which made us rely on Josh Allen too much. And so if we can get a guy like Zach Moss to be that power guy, that closer, right, in the fourth quarter when you got 4 minutes, you know, left in the clock and you want somebody just to close the game out, you got a lead, right, and you want to hold on to that lead and just close the game out with the power back or even in goal line situations, you got Zach Moss. If he can do that this year, that's going to be tremendous for the running back room. So you've got three different guys who all provide different skill sets. The only odd man out is Duke Johnson, who's similar to James Cook. You know what I'm saying? Now, so if James Cook can beat out Duke Johnson, I don't see why they would even keep him on the roster, man. Scott Blake, you said, yo, I don't think they thought Cook would be available in the draft. That's why they picked up Johnson. That's a possibility as well. I mean, you just never know in the draft, right? You just never know. So, and that goes back to my point from earlier is that Brandon Bean, that's why he looks to fill as many needs as possible in free agency, right? Because he doesn't want to go on the draft saying like, you know, dang, I need a running back. I wasn't able to get one in free agency, but man, I'm going to have to reach possibly. No. So even if he wasn't able to get James Cook, at least he had Motor, Moss, and Duke Johnson, right? You see what I'm saying? And so James Cook being available was just icing on the cake, and he went after and got him. So I think it's James Cook's job to lose, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I don't see where Duke Johnson is going to make the roster as long as James keeps on doing what he's doing. Yeah, I don't see it at all. And yeah, put that comment back up. Yeah, there you go. 716 Truth is speaking the truth, man. Don't leave the chat without hitting that like button. And don't just hit it. Smash that thing. Smash the like button. We've got 150 plus in this thing right now. I appreciate you guys so very much for tuning in to another edition, another episode of Rated Rev, brought to you by the Buffalo Fanatics. It's your boy Rev, joined by my man Ev Harrington. Yo, Ev. Man, I want to talk about the offensive line, man, before we get ready to wrap it up, man. The offensive line in camp, man, it's for me, I've got a lot of high hopes for the O-line, right? I had high hopes coming in, right? We've got, you know, a very good tackle and Deion Dawkins, man, right? We brought Ryan Bates back, or Rick Bates. We've got Mitch Morse, one of the best centers who's underrated. Like, we don't really talk about him a whole lot across the offensive line. We've got a budding superstar potentially in Spencer Brown. And then we brought in one of the best run blocking offensive guards in the National Football League, according to Taylor Lewan, his former teammate in Roger Saffold. And so when you just look at that across the board on paper, man, you know, it looks very, very promising. But as we know what happened, injuries. All right. So now we had injury to Roger Saffold, right? Who's going to be out. And so that's paved the way for the depth guys, man. And so we've got early injuries are kind of reminiscent to last year, in my opinion. And so my question, man, that I want to pose to you, Evan, and to the chat, man, is this, like we haven't, like, what's up with this O-line continuity issues, man? Like, are we already having these issues already? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you don't have your starting or your penciled in starters in camp, you know what I'm saying? Because guys are injured. Like, how important is continuity to the offensive line? And how important is it going to be to this O-line again this year?
Yeah, you know, continuity is huge. Just a little bit, a few years ago, actually, the Bills came into, I'm trying to remember if it was the 2019 to 2020 season or the 2020 to the 2021 season, but the Bills came back with the same offensive line grouping from the year prior. Yeah. And, you know, that was something huge that Sean McDermott noted, was that continuity is huge because you don't mm-hmm. need to go over those reps as much as you need to. You can kind of just almost plug and play your guys. You can just throw them out on the field and they have that continuity with each other. They know how to play off each other. So that's something that's huge. Mm-hmm. But I get it. Continuity is great. It would be awesome if all these guys played together consistently.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you name the offensive line and throw it all on paper, and you can just imagine on the field, Dawkins at the left tackle, Bates mm-hmm. at left guard, Moore center, Roger Saffold right guard, Spencer Brown right tackle. I mean, that's a pretty solid offensive line very overall. Formidable. You got Deion Dawkins, who's a Pro Bowl left tackle, Mitch Morse, one of the best centers in the game, Ryan Bates, who you called Spencer Brown a rising star. I think Rick Bates could be a diamond in the rough, who could be a great offensive guard for us. Yeah. You know, Bills fans always go, the biggest knock on Brandon Bean was letting go of Wyatt Teller.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. Wyatt Teller is phenomenal, but he still might have a chance to repeat himself and correct it with Ryan Bates. Yeah. Might not be as good as Wyatt Teller, but can still be a very good starting guard in this league. And then Roger Saffold. You mentioned how Taylor Lewan said he was one of the best run blocking guards in football. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's correct. Roger Saffold is up and down one of the best run blocking offensive guards in the league. And then you got Spencer Brown. You know, right now he is a little banged up, had an offseason surgery.
Right.
You know, when this guy comes back, he's going to come back with a vengeance. He's hungry. I had the chance to interview Spencer Brown earlier this offseason. I mean, he's ready. Like, I had some, you know, private chats with him that were not in the interview. But, you know, he was saying, like, man, I'm just ready to get back. I've been grinding all season long. I've been, you know, practicing so many things within my game that I thought were rough for me last year. The guy's ready. He's ready to take that next step and be that, you know, elite formidable tackle opposite side of Deion Dawkins, mm-hmm. protecting the right side of Josh Allen.
Yeah, the O-line, man, just on paper, when you look at the starters, right, especially, you know, once we get Roger Saffold back healthy, you know, and hopefully, you know, the injury bug doesn't hit him, man, because we know he's had his bout with injuries. But assuming all things, you know, are equal, right, and everybody's healthy, that offensive line is going to be very good. You know, right now in camp is where they need to get that continuity, you know, figured out, man, because we know they had a slow start last year, man. I mean, and many guys had bouts with COVID. And so it just, I think that is what hurt the offense last year, early on, when we had these losses against like the Jags and just these awful losses and these lulls throughout the season where we should have been beating these teams. It was because of the offensive line. And then it also played a role. It kind of had a ripple effect on the running game. You know what I'm saying? And so I think it's so incredibly important for us to make sure that the offensive line is stable as soon as possible, you know, ideally right now while we are still in camp, get that five solidified now and get them, because I mean, you bring in, we have Deion Dawkins coming back. Yeah, we've got Bates coming back and Morris and then Brown coming back, right? Brown coming back in year two. But we got Roger Saffold, who's new to the O-line. So he has to learn, right? He has to learn, how these guys play, you know what I'm saying? And he has to learn, you know, the cues from Mitch Morris. He has to learn what it's like to be, you know, beside Deion Dawkins. So there's a whole lot that's involved in it. And Ken Dorsey even mentioned it. He said this. In his press conference, and I quote, he said, "I think the biggest thing for us is trying to get those five guys together to create continuity as quickly as possible." It's so important. It's good to know right now that we've got depth, right? I mean, we've got guys like who are stepping up, Questenberry, right? Who's coming in from Tennessee. Who's bringing that dog mentality, right? Along with Roger Saffold, right? We know how that team plays, right? And then we've got guys who are also stepping.
You got like Greg Van Rotten. You got
yes.
You got Mance. You got Mance. Tommy Doyle stepping in at right tackle.
Yeah.
You got some players on this offensive line. You know, depth wise, I know people hate it. Cody Ford's stepping in as a depth player. Whether or not people like it. He's depth. He might not be that bad of a depth player as people might think. He's not a quality starter.
Yeah.
But the Bills, you know, have Luke Kennard, our draft pick.
Yeah.
From this past year, fifth round pick.
And then we still have Ike Bakker who's on the pup list right now.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying, so like we have guys, man. So it's good to know that we've got quality depth. Okay. It's just right now. It's all about making sure that the starting five gets stable, man. We got to get Saffold back. And this is of course assuming that Saffold is you know what I'm saying, when he comes back healthy, is going to be able to beat out the likes of Questenberry and all these other guys, you know what I'm saying? If we were to assume that, then yeah, I mean he's a starting guy, so we got to get him plugged in as soon as possible, you know.
Plus Jordan Simmons, who we just signed.
We just signed to
the 90-man roster, the training camp roster. He's played. I remember I read the article that Sal Capaccio wrote out about him, but he played about nine or ten games in the NFL too. So to have that guy too, and then Capra too. You know, Jason Taylor mentions Capra in the chat.
Yeah.
So you know, we have some guys, you know, especially in the interior ranks that are good. You know, Greg Mance, Greg Van Rotten, Capra, David Questenberry, Ike Butker, Cody Ford. Mm-hmm. Like, these are players, Jordan Simmons. Like, these are all guys who play in the interior. And that's huge.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. And then, you know, another impact, I guess you can say it, across the offensive line is Aaron Cromer, man. Like, Aaron Cromer is already making an impact. You know what I'm saying, on the offensive line. I remember Deion Dawkins was talking about you know, just how technical Aaron Cromer is, man, and how specific he is and what he wants. Did you guys see that somebody, I don't know if it was the Bills, the Buffalo Bills Twitter team who put out that clip of the O-line. I think it was like, I don't know if it was Bates and Brown together, just like how they were stepping together. Dang, I wish I remembered where that was from. I don't know if you had seen it before, Evan, or not, but man, like how in sync they were. Like, it just looked completely different from years past, right? When we had Bobby Johnson. But that's what we can expect from Aaron Cromer, man. He's a technical guy, man. He's very specific in how he wants his O-line to look and how he wants them to block. But more importantly, or more than just his impact on the O line, he has an impact beyond that O line as well, man. And Ken Dorsey even mentioned that. He said part of that with Cromer is the run game stuff, the protection stuff. He explained. So now he's given responsibility to Aaron Cromer to not just, you know, be the coordinator of the O-line or the coach of the O-line, but to actually be in charge of the run game, you know, stuff, and even the protections. And then he goes on to say this. He says, you know, kind of bringing in some new ideas which always kind of, you know, infuses a little bit of something into the offense maybe that we haven't done here in the past. So that's been very exciting with him, speaking of Aaron Cromer. So I love that Ken Dorsey is picking the brains of these guys who are very gifted, very talented, but have a ton of experience in the National Football League. He's picking the brains of Aaron Cromer, trying to figure out, you know, hey, man, maybe you can infuse some stuff that we haven't done before. You know what I'm saying? That we haven't done, you know, in years past. And just bringing that fresh new ideas. And so Cromer, man, is having an impact on the offensive line, even beyond the O-line, which is something also that I'm excited to see.
Yeah, you know, you can never not have enough, like, mouths at the table speaking. You know, when you bring in a guy like Aaron Cromer, who has coached some of the guys on the offensive line, the most notable player is Roger Saffold. Yeah. And every time you hear Roger Saffold speak within the media, he always talks super highly of a guy like Aaron Cromer. And, you know, I get it. A lot of the players on this team talk highly of our coaches and our personnel staff. But just the extent that Roger Saffold speaks of Aaron Cromer is huge. And you hear all the new guys or all the players that are still on the roster talking about the new addition of Aaron Cromer and what it means to them to have a guy like him coming in, you know, replacing Bobby Johnson,
even Eric Wood has talked about it because he coached with him. He played under him. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, he has high regard for Aaron Cromer.
Yeah, you know, Aaron Cromer is going to come in and, you know, replace Bobby Johnson, who had a tight relationship with the locker room. You have your opinions on Bobby Johnson, whether you think he was a good O-line coach or whether you think he wasn't. But at the end of the day, he had a tight relationship with that O-line. And a guy like Aaron Cromer is going to come in and I think even make the offensive line room more tighter. Yeah. And he's going to get them playing the way he wants them to play. And you're going to see an improved offensive line. You're going to see Ryan Bates take a next step in his game. You're going to see Roger Saffold be a huge addition to this team. You're going to see Brown taking the next step into year two. Dawkins is probably going to be even a better run defender than he was in years past. And same with Mitch Morse. Mitch Morse has probably been the most steady, reliable, best offensive lineman we've had over the last three, four years. And he's only going to get better. So that's what you're going to get in Aaron Cromer. You're going to get a guy, like you mentioned everything, how technical he is. Just everything about him is just going to be huge with this Bills O-line.
Yeah, and then the running game as well. The running game is going to be huge because we know what he did when he was with Buffalo, man. I think we led the league in rushing back-to-back, 2 years straight, with Aaron Cromer. Led the league. And we had an offensive line that featured, if I'm not mistaken, we had Eric Wood. We had Richie Incognito. I don't know if we had Deion Dawkins at the time. I think we had Cordy Glenn. No.
Cordy Glenn. Before we traded him to Cincinnati,
And so, I mean, when you look at that offensive line, I mean, just with those guys right there, and those guys were stout against the run, man. Those guys were freaking dogs. And we've got arguably, probably on paper, better offensive line than when we had when Cromer was here his first time. Because when you look at the five, and when you go from left to right, like you had mentioned, Evan, Deion Dawkins, you know what I'm saying? Then I mean, if you put Bates or Roger Saffold, you flip them, you know, however they go. But let's just say Saffold at left guard. Then you got center with Mitch Morse, and then Bates, and then Spencer Brown. Just in the run game, these guys are incredible run blockers. And they are incredibly athletic, too, which is a huge thing and a huge plus because that's going to tip the hand and let us know kind of what we can expect. Spencer Brown, man. Spencer Brown in the run game. I know. You know, he took his lumps and pass protection, and you know, and I believe he's going to get better with better coaching. But man, like Scott Blakely said, Spencer's got some nasty in him, some absolute dogness in him. Love Spencer Brown, getting him in space and letting him move. You know, when you slant that offensive line, this O-line, and especially, and we cannot talk more about Mitch Morse. We need to talk more about Mitch Morse. That guy is phenomenal, man. He is phenomenal across the O-line. Like you had mentioned, Evan, he has been the most consistent offensive lineman that we've had in years, and he continues just to be just Mr. Steady. When you get these guys moving, man, it's going to be tough. And put my man Silas back up here because I want to read this comment. It's going to be tough, man. Yeah, this might be the first year Buffalo has seven guys he trusts in the O-line room. Yeah. You're right, Sal. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, absolutely. Because we got depth across. I mean, if we just go past the first five that we mentioned, right? And then you look at Questenberry. Who else are you going to put on there? You got Questenberry. Who else are you
going to put? Van Rotten, maybe.
Van Rotten. Yeah, Van Riden.
Put Ike over Greg Van Rotten.
Yeah, right. Me too.
So I would put the guys you're comfortable with, your starting five, like we mentioned, and then I would go David Questenberry, and Ike Butker. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, like depending on how he plays in camp,
Doyle.
I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Doyle or Luke Tanetta.
Yeah.
You never know what Greg Mance can do. He seems like a popular player in the locker room.
Yeah.
He could be a solid, backup option as well.
Yeah, appreciate you, Scott Blakely, coming in here with the super chat. Yo, my man says, yo, I love the show, guys. Way to bring the passion. Scott, we can't help it, man. We can't help it. We're talking about the Buffalo Bills, man. The Buffalo friggin' Bills. One of the best teams in the National Football League right now. Super Bowl contending Bills. We got to bring the passion. We got to bring the heat. You know what I'm saying? Training camp is underway. Guys are performing. We've got incredible competitions, all across the board, from the wide receiver room, the slot receiving room, to the running backs, man, to the secondary, to some of the cornerbacks across the depth, the D-line. It's competition everywhere, man. Even in the punt room, the kicking room, we got competition. Well, man, Hawk, and then is it Hawk or Hack? Hawk, right? It's Hawk, right? Right?
Hack.
Hack?
It's Hack.
Hack?
Matt Hack.
Matt Hack? Matt Hawk?
That's what I call him. Call him Matt Hack.
We got him. We've got the punk god. We've got, Matt Reza, who, by the way, this competition is getting kind of tight, man. It's getting kind of tight. We had mentioned it, I think on Rico's show, the Rico report last week, man, about them guys and how Matt Hawk or Hack, whatever you want to call it, he feels the heat. And he's not letting the rookie just go ahead and take his job. I mean, he's punting, very well. But the key thing that he's doing is he's bringing that hang time that Matt Hawk isn't. I mean Matt Reza at the time right now isn't doing. So that's another position room that we can look out for.
Yeah, no, I was reading the reports from I believe it was day three or day four. Again, someone can correct me on that, but. Matt Ariza, I got to get used to these names. They're new. But he was doing very well with Tyler Bass holding the football. Mm-hmm. Tyler Bass made about six kicks in a row with Matt Ariza holding the football for him. And I believe one was either a 53-yarder or 57-yarder. Nice. And he made it. And Matt Ariza was the holder for it. So as of right now, we are seeing Matt Ariza get a little bit better holding the football for Tyler Bass. And that's going to be probably the biggest thing coming down for this punting battle, who can hold the ball the best. I mean, that compared to the two, because if Matt Ariza isn't holding the football correctly, he's gone.
Right.
He might be a better overall punter, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, you got to be able to hold the ball on kicks, especially in this Buffalo weather. We all know Matt Ariza is a great punter. He's got it all. That that's why the Bills drafted him. But he dropped a little bit in the draft because of his holding ability. Mm-hmm. And if he can get things together and get things ready for this punting battle as training camp goes along, he can win it, but it's going to be all up to the ability of Matt Ariza holding the football.
No doubt about it. If he holds football, I need him to get that hang time, together too, because booming the ball deep, it means nothing if there's no hang time and the returner has all day just to take the ball and run it. And you're not giving your coverage team enough time to get down there, down the field. So as much as we need him to show that he can be reliable in holding the ball, I think even more important, man, is that hang time, man, because special teams is everything. We can't have him, giving these guys, these returners, opportunities, man, to return it. We can't have that. But at the end of the day, man, I still think that the young guy, I don't see Brandon Bean wasting a draft pick like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't draft a punter of all things, a punter, only to to cut him. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't see that happening. We'll see. But I've got high hopes for Matt Ariza. I think the sky's the limit. I mean, I think the dude is legit. He's like Tyler Bass, just punting the ball. I think he's that type of potential guy,
For sure.
Yo, we are coming to the end of the show, man. We are an hour and 30 plus minutes into the show with 140 something watching. Again, we appreciate you guys so very much for tuning into the show. do us this favor, man. If you are as excited as me and Evan are about this Bills season, smash that like button. Don't go anywhere. Smash that like button, man, because, yo, the Buffalo Bills, I'm excited about it, man. I can't say enough about them. But you know what? I think this is where we need to end it, man. I think this is where we need to end it. And I'm going to do it again. I'm going to show you guys some more Josh Allen highlights, because I love Josh Allen in the offense. I love what these guys are doing, man.
Who doesn't?
Dude, these guys are freaking, they're lighting it up, man. They're killing it. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So before we head on out, let me show you this gorgeous dime that Josh Allen dropped once again. Here it is. Like it, love it, enjoy it. Check my man out. Uh-oh, hold on a second. There it is. Look at this. Look at that dime. Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful, man. So beautiful.
Is that on Dotson?
I think that was on Saran Neal. That looked like Saran Neal. Let me back it up a little bit here. I think I caught 33. Let me back it up some more. Let's see. I see a three. I don't know what Dotson wears.
That may be Dotson.
Yeah. Yeah, that may be. Yeah, I think you're right. Nevertheless, my man Dotson Knox, dude. Yes, Silas. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Yo, Buffalo is loaded. All caps loaded. All caps, LOADED, !! Absolutely loaded, man. This is our year 100,000%. I fully believe it, man. I fully believe it. As long as everything can go well, man, we hit the ground running. We peak at the right time, right when we need to peak. Dude, I don't know, man. I don't know too many teams, man, who are really going to be able to stop us, man. I just don't see it. No, a little bit more than a Saturday night drunk, you fool. Yeah, all that, man. All that F, man. Yo, brother. So thank you, man. I thank you, man. I appreciate you, man, for hopping on with me, man.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Anytime. I love hopping on any of the shows. It's a great time,
man. Let me know, man. What's going, man? What do you got going on? Any articles you got right now? What's up, man? Let the people know what's up.
Well, so for anyone who doesn't know, normally for almost every episode that the Buffalo Fanatics do, we do throw up an article on FanSided. That is a partner that we have here with the Buffalo Fanatics. We do kind of a recap on the article. So if you want to, you know, go check that out. Normally every episode or every other couple episodes, I throw up an article. Just recapping the most recent episode, and that'll be awesome if you guys can go check that out. Just because, you know, we put a lot of effort into it, and you know, it's just a great little recap about what you watched, and you can just kind of plug your memory and your brain with a little more knowledge from the show. So it's a great read. It'll be awesome if you can go check that out and go share that around with your family and friends. But other than that, I mean, just kind of getting ready for Bills training camp, doing more stuff with Buffalo Fanatics. Obviously, hopping on with Rev tonight was huge. Getting ready for training camp. I'll be attending some. I believe I'm going the 2nd, 4th, 5th, and possibly the 7th. So if any of you guys are out there, you know, say what's up. Come say hi, and I'll chat a little Bills football. I'll be up in the stands. I'll probably be covering a little bit of the Bills training camp as well, probably on the BF Twitter or Instagram. So keep an eye out for that. But other than that, I mean, if you guys want to keep up with anything I'm doing personally, follow me on Twitter at EvanH716, Instagram, EvanHarrington_63. And I still post on TikTok, NFL Analyst, at NFL Analyst on TikTok. We do a little Bills content. I'm going to be starting to break down more Bills coverage over there, especially as the season's progressing. But yeah, that's basically it for right now. But I'm just getting pumped for Bills training camp, man. It's something that gets me hyped up every year.
Man, you ain't lying, brother. I mean, yo, when you go to that game, when you go to that scrimmage, brother, hey man, make sure you take some good notes, man. Put some content out, man, for our watchers, my viewers, man, our followers, dude. Because it's that game, that's something that I'm looking forward to hearing about, man. I can't wait for that. We finally get some pads on, and so we can see some things popping off. And we get to see the O-line going up against this D-line. I want to see these guys get after it, man. So I'm excited about that, dude. I can't wait for it, man. Evan, appreciate you, man, so very much, dude. Again, yo, you are the man. Yo, we are an hour and 40 in.
We are
headed out, baby. We are headed out, man. You guys again. I like me. Right? You know how we do it, man. Grace and peace to you guys. Until next time, baby, from myself and Evan Harrington right here in the Buffalo Fanatics Network, we will see you again next week. And make sure you stay tuned to my man Rico on Friday Night Live, the Rico Report, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I know he's going to bring some heat as well. And then we got the BF Riders Club Saturday. We got content out the wazoo. That's the word that is made up, out the wazoo. So you guys, make sure you keep it locked and loaded right here on the Buffalo Fanatics Network, baby. And until next time, baby, grace and peace. God bless. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills, baby.